Chapter 14. The thing about your stories, Lindsay was saying in the darkness as they approached the forest in front of them, is that they still don't have any morals, and you can't do a good girl voice, and you don't really talk about everyone else. The story's still about you. But anyway, I can imagine this Catherine now, a little bit. She's clever, and she's just a little mean to you. I think you get off on that. Most guys do. It's how I got Colin, really. Katrina was hotter and wanted him worse. They'd been dating for a while, and when he fell for me. But she was too easy. I know she's my friend, and possibly Hassan's girlfriend, whatever. But Katrina's easier than a four-piece jigsaw. Colin laughed, and Lindsay went on talking. Getting people to like you is so easy, really. It's a wonder more people don't do it. It's not so easy for me. Whatever. I like you, and I never really like anyone. Hassan likes you, and I can tell that he never really likes anybody either. You just need more people who don't like people. You don't ever really like anybody. They passed into the woods, following a narrow, periodically invisible trail. Lindsay motioned towards the trees and said, "You sure shot the holy hell out of this forest, smarty pants. Wouldn't that be something if you bagged a hog?" "I don't really want to kill a pig," Colin noted. He had read Charlotte's Web, see, and he repeated to himself, "You don't ever really like anybody." "Well, that's an exaggeration, I guess," she answered. "It's just that I learned a while ago that the best way to get people to like you is not to like them too much." "Well, but you care about a lot of people." "The oldsters," Colin offered. "Well, the oldsters are different," she said, and then stopped walking and turned around to Colin, who was already out of breath as he struggled up the hill behind her. "The thing about the oldsters, I think, is that they never screwed with me. So I don't worry about them." "Yeah. Oldsters and babies are exceptions." They walked in silence for a long time through the dense flat brush with thin trees rising straight and high all around them. The trail became increasingly steep, zigzagging up the hill, until they finally came to a rocky outcropping, perhaps 15 feet high, and Lindsay Lee Wells said, "Now comes the rock climbing." Colin looked up at the craggy face of the stone. "There are probably people who can successfully negotiate their way up that rock," he thought, "but I am not one of them." "No way," he said. She turned back towards him, her cheeks flushed and glistening with sweat. "I'm kidding." She scampered up a wet, mossy boulder, and Colin followed. Immediately, he saw a narrow, chest-high crack covered over by a spiderweb. "See, I'm taking you here, because you're the only guy I know who's skinny enough. Squeeze on through," he said. Colin pushed the spiderweb aside. "Sorry, Charlotte." He turned sideways, crouched down, and inched away from the fading light outside. Soon he was completely blind, his knees and back and head all against the rock, and for a moment he panicked, thinking Lindsay had tricked him and would leave him wedged in here. But he kept shuffling his feet forward. Something glided against his back. He screamed. "Relax, it's me," she said. Her hands found his shoulders, and she said, "Take one more step." And then he could no longer feel the rock pressing in on him. She turned him so that he was facing forward. "Keep walking," she said. "You can stand up straight now." And then her hands disappeared, and he heard her sweeping at the ground. And she said, "I keep a flashlight here, but I can't f—" "Got it." She pressed the flashlight into his hands, and he fumbled with it, and the world lit up. "Wow," said Colin. Approximately square, the cave's only room was big enough to lie down in any direction, although the grey-brown ceiling sloped down towards the back, making it hard to stand in a lot of places. It contained a blanket, a sleeping bag, several old pillows, and one unmarked mason jar filled with some sort of liquid. He nudged it with his foot. "Booze," Lindsay explained. "Where'd you get it?" "There's a guy out in Danville who makes corn whiskey moonshine." "No shit. And he'll sell it to you if you've got $10 and are old enough to walk." "Colin gave it to me. I told him I drank it, but really I brought it out here because it adds ambience." Colin moved the flashlight slowly around the cave's walls. "Sit down," Lindsay said, "and turn off the light." And then it was the kind of dark your eyes never adjust to. "How'd you find this place?" "I was just hiking around. I used to love walking through Mum's land with all the oldsters when I was little. I started coming by myself during middle school, and I just stumbled across it one day in 8th grade. I must have walked past this rock 100 times without ever noticing anything." "It's weird talking to you. I can't see you at all." "I can't see you either. We're invisible. I've never been here with someone else." It's different being invisible with someone. So what do you do here? What do you mean? Well, it's too dark to read. I guess you could get a headlamp or something. But other than that... No, I just sit here. When I was a nerd, I came here to be somewhere where no one would find me. And now, I don't know, I guess the same reason. Do you want to drink it? The moonshine. I never really drank before. Colour me surprised. Also, moonshine can make you blind, and what I've seen of blindness so far hasn't really impressed me. Yeah, that would suck for you if you couldn't read anymore. But how often are you going to find yourself in a cave with moonshine? Live a little, says the girl who never wants to leave her hometown. Oh, burn. Okay, I got the bottle. Talk to me and I'll come over to you. Hello, my name is Colin Singleton, and it's very dark, and so you should come over here to my voice, except the acoustics in this place are really Oh, that's me. That's my knee. Hi. Hi. Ladies first. All right. Sweetly. All right. Sweet holy shit, Stickers. It tastes like you're washing down a bite of corn with a pint of lighter fluid. Did it make you go blind? I have absolutely no idea. Okay, your turn. Oh, wow. Wow. Man, it's like French kissing a dragon. It's the funniest thing you've ever said, Colin Singleton. I used to be funnier. I kind of lost all my confidence. Let me tell you a story. Ooh, a Lindsay Lee Wells story. Does it star an Archduke? No, it starts a Lindsay, but it's got all the elements of a top-notch story. Where are you? Oh, there. Hi. Hi, knee. Hi, calf. Okay. So we all went to Danville for elementary school, and pretty much all the gutshot kids stuck together, because everyone else thought we were dirty and poor and spread lice. But then in about third grade, like I've said, I was ugly. Colin and all his friends started saying I was a dog. I hate that. I hate kids like that so fucking much. Rule number one, no interrupting. But anyway, so they started calling me Lass. Short for Lassie. Hey, he called you that just the other day on the way to the Oldsters. Yeah, I recall. Also, to repeat myself, rule number one. So it's fourth grade, okay? And it's Valentine's Day. I really wanted to get some Valentines. So I asked Hollis what I should do, and she said I should just make a Valentine for everyone in the class, and then people would respond. So Hollis bought a bunch of these Charlie Brown Valentines, and I wrote one for every kid in the class, even though my handwriting wasn't very good, and it took me a shit long time. And then, predictably, I didn't get any Valentines. So then I went home, and I was really upset, but I didn't want to tell Hollis about it. So I just sat in the chair by the window in the room, and just felt so... just horrible. I don't even want to think about it. And then I see Colin running up to my house with a little cardboard box. And he's the cutest guy in school, and the only one from Gutshot who's popular. He puts the box on my doorstep, then rings the doorbell and runs off, and I run down there, and my heart's beating like crazy. And I'm so hopeful that he's got this secret crush on me, and I get down there, and there's this really elaborately decorated cardboard box with red construction paper hearts pasted all over it. God, I hadn't thought about this in so long until he called me Lass. Wait. What's in that box? Alpo. A can of Alpo. But I got him in the end, because now he dates that dog. Wow. Jesus Christ. What? Nothing. Just, you know, I thought my romantic relationships were fucked up. Anyway, it became my life's goal to get him, to kiss him, to marry him. I can't explain it, but I did. And you did it. I did. He's different now. I mean, we were eight. We were little kids. He's very sweet now, very protective and everything. Do you ever wonder whether people would like you more or less if they could see inside you? I mean, I've always felt like the Catherines dump me right when they start to see what I look like from the inside. Well, except K-19. But I always wonder about that. If people could see me the way I see myself, if they could live in my memories, would anyone love me? Well, he doesn't love me now. We've been dating for 2 years, and he's never once said it. But he would not really not love me if he could see inside, because he's so real about everything. I mean, you can say a lot of shit about Colin, but he is completely himself. He's going to work in that factory his whole life, and he's going to have the same friends, and he's really happy with that, and he thinks it matters. But if he knew... What? Finish that sentence. I'm full of shit. I'm never myself. I've got a southern accent around the oldsters. I'm a nerd for graphs and deep thoughts without you. I'm Miss Bubbly Pretty Princess with Colin. I'm nothing. The fact about chameleoning your way through life is that it gets you to where nothing is real. Your problem is, how did you say it, that you're not significant. Don't matter. I don't matter. Right, matter. But at least you can get to the part where you don't matter. Things about you and things about Colin and things about Hassan and Katrina are either true or they aren't true. Katrina is bubbly, Hassan is hilarious, but I'm not like that. I'm what I need to be at any moment, to stay above the ground but below the radar. The only sentence that begins with I that's true of me is, I'm full of shit. Well, I like you. And you aren't chameleoning in front of me. I just figured that out. Like, you bite your thumb in front of me, which is a private habit, but you do it in front of me because I don't count as public. I'm at your secret hiding place. You're okay with me seeing inside you a little. A little, maybe. Because I pose no threat. I'm a dork. No, you're not. No, I am, and that's why. Maybe. I never thought about it. I don't mean to sound so judgmental about it. It's just interesting. I'm not threatened by you, either, because I never really liked popular people before. But you're not really like them. It's more like you found a way to hijack their cool, that's all. Hi. Hi. We shouldn't. Well, you started it. Right, but I started it just so that I couldn't say we shouldn't, really dramatically. Ha! We should leave it at our foreheads touching, and our noses touching, and your hand on my leg, and we shouldn't, you know? Your breath smells like booze. Your breath smells like you just made out with a dragon. Hey, that's my joke. Sorry. Had to diffuse tension. What are you doing? Bite my goddamn thumb. My private habit. They finally left the cave well after dark, but the moonlight was so bright Colin found himself blinking it away. It was an awkward and largely quiet hike back down to the car. From there they drove back to the Pink Mansion. They had just pulled into the driveway when Lindsay said, I mean, of course I like you, and you're great, but let's just... It's just not to be. And he nodded, because he couldn't have a girlfriend without a finished theorem. And anyway, she was a Lindsay. They opened the door quietly, hoping not to disturb Hollis's work/QVC watching. The moment Colin closed the door, the phone rang. Hello, he heard Hollis say from inside the kitchen. Lindsay grabbed Colin then and pulled him over against the wall, where they could listen without being seen. We'll leave it out for the garbage men then, Hollis said. What a bunch of bullshit. They can't charge you to pick up trash, that's why we pay taxes. Well, I'm sorry, Roy, but that's bullshit. No, we can't afford it, believe me. No, absolutely not. Well, I don't know, Roy. No, I understand the problem. Hold on, I'm thinking. Christ, my daughter's going to be home any second. What about the field back there? We own that field, right? Yeah, exactly. All you need is a goddamn bulldozer and a forklift. Well, I don't like it either, but unless you've got another idea... Fine. I'll see you on Thursday. The phone clanked against the receiver. Hollis, Lindsay whispered, owes a shitload of money to the swear jar. Then she led Colin through the hall and into the game room. Out the window, she whispered. Colin raised the slim window facing the front yard as quietly as he could, then motioned to the screen. He would have said something about the screen, but he knew he couldn't whisper. Christ, it's like you've never snuck out of a house before, Lindsay whispered. She pressed at the corners of the screen and then lifted it up. She squirmed out head first, her skinny legs kicking slightly as she did a somersault onto the front lawn. Colin followed feet first, trying a kind of limbo strategy that looked ridiculous. Having successfully sneaked out of the house, Lindsay and Colin brushed themselves off, ambled to the front door and opened it. Hollis, Lindsay called, we're home. Hollis was seated on the couch, a pile of papers in her lap. She turned to them and smiled. "Hey," Hollis said. all trace of anger gone from her voice. "Did you all have fun?" Lindsay looked at Colin and not at Hollis. "I've rarely had so much fun in my whole life," she said.
"I bet," said Hollis, who didn't seem to be listening.
"It was the warehouse," Colin spoke softly, conspiratorially, as they climbed the stairs. "She goes to the warehouse on Thursdays."
"Yeah," Lindsay smirked. "Yeah, I know. You've lived here 3 weeks. I've lived here 17 years. I don't know what's going on, but between that and selling land and always being in a furious phone conversation whenever we show up at the house, I'm starting to think that a road trip might be in order," said Lindsay.
"They can solve a surprising number of problems, road trips," Colin acknowledged.
"Road trip? Did someone say road trip?" Hassan stood at the top of the staircase. "Because I'm in.
So is Katrina. She's a college student, you know. I'm dating a college girl."
"She's getting her clinical nursing assistant license at Danville Community," Lindsay said dismissively.
"That's college. That's all I'm saying.
And to think, Singleton, you thought I'd never get a college girl unless I went to college."
"How is the date?" Colin asked.
"Sorry, dude. Can't talk about it. My lips are too numb from all the kissing.
That girl kisses like she wants to suck out your soul."
Colin sneaked into Hassan's room immediately after Lindsay went downstairs to bed, and they discussed Hassan's situation. Second base, over the shirt. And then Colin told him about Lindsay, minus the secret hideout, because that seemed private.
"I mean," Colin said, "and it was dark, and our whole faces were touching, except our lips. She just brought her head against mine all of a sudden."
Wait, do you like her?"
"I don't know. At that moment, I kind of did."
"Dude, think about it. If you could make your theorem work, you could predict how it would go."
Colin smiled at the thought.
"Now, more than ever, you have to finish."